Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit and earned degrees from Oakland University and Central Michigan University. He worked for DTE Energy for 27 years in various senior-level management positions and is the past chairman of Next Energy Corporation. Since 2002, he's been the president and CEO of the Detroit Economic Growth Corporation. He's also the chairman of the board of the Eastern Market Corporation. His name, George Jackson Jr., and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with George Jackson Jr., the president and CEO of the Detroit Economic Growth Corporation. George, welcome. An honor to have you.
How are you doing?
Terrific. Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, it's a pretty typical Detroit childhood. My father came off of a farm in southern Georgia and heard about there was money to be made working in the auto factories in the city of Detroit. My mom was a native Detroiter, but her family, same way, they're from South Carolina. Heard about the money to be made and jobs in Detroit at the auto plant. So I have a very typical family in regards to that migration from the South to work in the automobile factories on the assembly line. And then from that standpoint, went on to school and Detroit public school system, both Fisher Elementary School, post junior high. There were no middle schools back then. And then I graduated from Detroit Cooley. And I must say that I got a very good education at DPS during the time that I was there.
George, we're so old. When we went to school, there was no history in school. What's the biggest thing that you learned from your dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your mom?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with my dad was a guy who was the type of person who did not let you make excuses for not accomplishing what you should set out to accomplish. And I think that was just drilled in me with that, the aspect of both education, getting a good education, and as he said, one that was a lot better than his because he only went to the eighth grade. My mom went to college. She went through to 2 years of college, but they really instilled education in me. And also, again, it was the no excuses, set a goal and reach for that goal, work hard for that goal, and don't let anything get in the way of you reaching that goal.
If there's a mom or dad listening today and they have young children, what would you tell them? How do you give them that work ethic?
Well, I think it's a combination of things in regards to both what you say to them and what you instill to them in terms of verbally, but also the things you instill with them in behaviorally. One, you are the best role model they could have. It's not some athlete. I have three sons, and I tell you, I'm very proud to say most of the time when somebody asks them who was their role model, they say it was my dad. You know, so that's where I instill that work ethic. And also, I think that some good old school parenting plays a role. And what I mean by that is, again, holding, love, be very, very loving, but get your kids used to holding them accountable, not responsible and accountable, and at the same time being a very loving parent.
Talk to us about the need for an education today.
Well, the education at this time, I think, is even more critical than ever. I think people have said that forever, though. But what I mean by that, though, is the job market is very competitive. I see it in ways that a lot of people don't think about, though. And now you're hearing a lot more of that. And that in the development world, one thing I do is bring jobs to the city of Detroit. I work with a lot of companies that we try to attract to the city. And the bottom line is you need people who could fill those jobs. Now what we see more than ever is a gap between the available jobs and our people ready and prepared to fill those jobs. So what we have now is this economy where we have there are jobs out there, But do we have people with the skill sets and the education to fill the job? That is the issue. Because if you have the proper skill sets in the terms of today's jobs, you won't have a problem finding work. But it's very hard for people today. The day of I can just graduate from high school, go to a factory, make a very good living, which was the culture here, those days are over. Now, if you do get a job in a factory, one, it pays a lot less. But for you to really live a comfortable lifestyle, you definitely need an education. It goes beyond high school.
Our mutual friend Roy Roberts has taken on, in his own words, the biggest challenge of his life and the most important challenge as the emergency manager of DPS. And he talks about creating a culture of education inside the city. How do we do that?
Well, again, I think that it's not just up to teachers and educators, but I think we need to instead all of us in this community, not just one city, but in general, have to understand that this dilemma affects all of us in one way, shape, or form. For example, if I'm an employer, do I want to come to a community and move my company to a community or expand into a community that basically has people that are not really excelling from an educational standpoint, a large number of people, I should say. So I think from that standpoint, I think that we all have to get involved. I think we all have to make sure that we provide opportunities for students that give them the perception and the feelings that they can excel and they can be rewarded for hard work. There is a gap there sometime. I really do feel that there are people who have given up. We have to do something at that level, but we also have to do something with parenting. And I think that is a major part of the problem. Going back to my own childhood, I had more parenting than I wanted, but it was for good reason. And now I understand why my parents did some of the things that they did. In today's society, and a lot of people in the city of Detroit, they don't have that kind of parenting. And that's not just unique to the city, but also in the suburbs. And you see that in the behavior of a lot of the students.
We're talking to George Jackson Jr. When we come back, we'll ask him about his 27 years in senior level positions at DTE Energy. And I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crystal. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're with George Jackson, amongst other things. He's the chairman of the board of the directors of Eastern Market Corporation. George, 27 years with DTE. Tell us about DTE.
Well, I started straight out of college from Oakland University. Started in the human resources area. And then I went to an area that I knew absolutely nothing about. I ended up working in the power plants as an administrator in the power plants. And started as a business analyst and took over all administration of a couple plants. But first, it was the Delray River Rouge plants, the system. And then also, I went from there to Connors Creek and the central heating system. And basically, what the general supervisory administration did, I used to say it was everything that the engineers didn't do fell under the general administration administrator. But it was a good experience. I mean, I didn't know much about electricity other than you turn on a switch and a light came on, and you end up learning something. So it was a real stretch type of a situation for me. It was a stretch because it was I was in a field that I really didn't know much about going in. But also, it was one of those, it stretched me for the better because I ended up with some skill sets that I did not have before. Again, going back to just being determined, I mean, learning a budget of a power plant means you had to learn the plant. And so you gained some skills from doing that and some assets in regards to your own internal resources as it relates to you building a resume and skills that would make you more employable in future jobs. I went from that job into the organizational planning and development area where I did some of the management training. And then I ran into a job, I should say a field, that it's one of these things where, you know, sometimes you go to college and you really think you know what you want to do, or either you don't know what you want to do. And then later on in life, you find out something happens or a situation presents itself and you say, that's it. What happened to me several years after going to leaving college, and that was when they opened up some jobs in the field of economic development. When I was in college, I didn't even know what economic development was, to be truthful. But I knew that when I bid on the job, and that was a position, that was a career that I wanted to pursue. It fit me like a glove, actually, and I had a passion for it. There were six divisions that were created, and when this opportunity surfaced, I had the one that everyone said, man, you got the worst one out of all the six. And guess what that was? City of Detroit. And I said, you know what? I'm going to turn this into a real blessing here. And actually, I think what happened was because I had to work so hard to make things happen, to get a deal done. I think basically what happened was I became the best economic development person there because I didn't have the luxury of basically sitting back in a chair and getting the phone call saying, hey, we're coming to Oakland County or Macomb or Western Wayne. I had to really sit there and convince the company, you could live here, you could move your company here, and everything's going to be fine, and we'll take care of everything for you. So from that standpoint, I began to develop some real good technique skills and also picking up a lot of politics along the way, which I think unfortunately you can't separate from economic development at times.
George Jackson, since 2002, you've been the president and CEO of the Detroit Economic Growth Corporation, DECG. Tell us about DEGC.
Detroit Economic Growth Corporation really is the economic development arm of the city of Detroit. But that includes such things as business attraction, business expansion, and also retaining businesses in the city of Detroit. We actually visit at least 250 companies a year. That are already in the city to work with them in terms of whatever issues they have. A lot of them are not economic development issues. They could be issues that relate to police, garbage pickup, whatever. But at the same time, we're out there working with those companies. And as a result of doing that, a lot of these companies who are thinking about leaving the city stay and even expand in the city. We also work with companies all over the world, all over the country, in regards to putting Detroit on the map in their decision-making process in regards to where they're going to make a future investment. So that is one aspect of the company. We also have another group called the Project Management Group, where we do a lot of the physical implementation in the city. For example, most of the work that was done leading up to the Super Bowl, it was called the Lower Woodward Project, where we actually did the streetscapes, Woodward, Broadway, and the Washington Boulevard. Remember, we changed Washington Boulevard back to a boulevard when we had that ugly red ornament that everybody hated. That was probably the only thing that we ever tore down that none of the preservationists showed up and complained about. But again, we did the front of Cobo Hall. We did facade improvement programs. We worked on campus marshes. So those people are architects, engineers, construction managers. So we do a lot of project management on behalf of the city. Brush Park, all the infrastructure there, the streets, the utilities, new utilities. So a lot of people don't know that we are very unique as a economic development organizations go, because we not only attract the company, put the deals together, we also then work on the physical implementation of projects, both on behalf of private developers as well as the city of Detroit.
The DEGC doesn't charge for its services, George.
No, we don't.
How do you you dress so well here. How do you stay in business?
Well, we receive funding from one, the city, and the DDA, which we run. We also are funded by several businesses and foundations as well. So it's a combination of funding sources, both public and private, that allow us to do the things that we do for this city and this region.
If you get in front of a prospective employer with a couple hundred IT people, let's say.
Yes.
So you'd love to get them to come downtown. Give us your pitch.
Well, first of all, I would say this. One, we have very reasonably priced real estate. We have a good talent pool in regards to potential employees in the IT field. And we will do everything we can to close the gap to make sure that your business costs are competitive. That's where you start. And that's when they, because those are they basically some of the things they're thinking about in their decision-making process. So we go right into, dwell right into their decision-making process, particularly in regards to filling that gap, if there is a gap, as it related to the business costs. We have to beat Ontario across the river. We have to compete with Ohio, Indiana, and who and on the East Coast, for example.
Midland, so, Michigan, everybody.
Absolutely.
I moved from Chicago in 1972, and time after time, various prominent people in these last 40 years have hoped for and predicted Detroit's comeback / revival. Yeah. The names change, but you know the song
yes.
stays the same.
Yes.
George Jackson, why is this time different?
I think that there is a substance that this time is not just a brick and mortar. I think over the years, when I mean brick and mortar, we say, let's build a Renaissance Center, and they will come. And let's do some big mega projects. What I mean by that is I call it feet on the street. I think this time we got it right because it's about people. One, you have a strong desire and pent-up demand for an urban lifestyle. Young professionals want to live in cities, and that includes the city of Detroit. And they're a big part of driving this. And before it was just building things that were physical, this time it's both physical, but it also is human beings who want an urban lifestyle. And we're also complementing that with some very wonderful physical things, you know, from the book Cadillac, more restaurants, more hotels, more bars, the river walk, things of this nature, nice things for people to do. Soon a light rail system that we'll be working on at the DEGC. Again, I think it's the fact that this time the people are a very important ingredient. People want to be part of an urban setting. And I have three sons. One is in Phoenix, Arizona, and he's going to stay there, but he's moving downtown Phoenix. And the other two they want to live in downtown or midtown. And they're suburban boys, but they said, "Hey, Dad, I'm glad they're moving." But but I'm just saying that the drive now, the difference is there is a better sense of place from a people perspective. And this is where the excitement is. And what's making the excitement much more exciting is that you have a people renaissance now, not just a brick and mortar.
We're talking to George Jackson. When we talk about come back, we'll talk about the five companies that recently offered the incentive to their employees for living in the city. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything's Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with George Jackson Jr., past chairman of Next Energy Corporation. George, five companies recently, Blue Cross Blue Shield, CompuWare, DTE Energy, Quicken Loans, and Strategic Staffing, S3, recently gave an incentive to their employees to live in the city. Tell us about that.
Well, I think that the incentive, one thing I'm really happy that they're doing this because I think it's going to help drive the real estate market in downtown Detroit and midtown. But it also shows a commitment by the corporate community, which I think is very vital. Everything can't be done by the public sector. And so this commitment is such that it helps them from a standpoint of having employees who live closer to where they work. But it also helps the city immensely, as well as the employees, from the standpoint of having more people moving into the city, living in the city, and I have to admit, paying taxes to help strengthen the tax base of the city. So from that standpoint, I think, I just want to say have a lot of gratitude for the companies that have done this. But also, it's good business for them as well. So, you know, from that standpoint, I think you're going to find a lot of takers based on what I said earlier on the show in regards to this pent-up demand for urban living and an urban lifestyle. And people want to walk from to where they work. just like they want to walk to a restaurant instead of having to get in the car and drive every get in the car everywhere they want to go in the suburb. So I think this has been we're really fortunate to have these this type of corporate contribution.
George Jackson, the M1 Woodward Mass Transit Rail. We've been talking about this for decades.
Literally decades.
Mackin Island has had more talk about this than any other subject. Is this real?
This time it is real. I think that one reason is real, too. Again, getting back to the people. We're working better together, the public and private sector. I think that and I think there's much more of a drive now to bring projects to fruition, irregardless of what differences you may have. And I'm seeing that with the M1 rail. I think that it is real this time also because of the fact is that we all realize, both public, private, as well as individuals, that, you know, this is a really critical piece, not only for the city of Detroit, but eventually for this to all work, we really do need a regional system of transportation. And it's also, when you look at it, you know, when you look at other major cities, probably Detroit has probably one of the worst transportation infrastructures. Not from highways, we're doing great. We're like number one in highways. I mean, best in class. But when it comes to public transportation, Detroit really it falls behind most major cities, and that also is part of the decision making process that companies make. You know, that is one factor. And so from that standpoint, again, I think that not only will this be good for the city, but I think that for it to be successful, we have to make this a regional system. And I think that's something that we are going to be working on.
What's the relationship with the new governor, Governor Snyder?
Well, I think that Governor Snyder, one, he's a pragmatist. He's a realist. And what I do like about him is that he is not he doesn't shift with political winds, you know, the whim of politics. I think that what he's saying is basically, let's hold ourselves accountable. Let's change the paradigm so that we are living within our means and spending and doing things within our means. But also, let's do a paradigm shift and make this a much more attractive place, being Detroit and Michigan, for businesses to locate and then grow in and prosper in. You know, so from that standpoint, you know, a lot of people are really upset with some of the decisions he's made. But let's face it, the culture that we've had in the past is no longer working. We've become less competitive in the state of Michigan. So we're going to have to make change, and that change is going to be painful to a lot of us, a lot of people. But at the same time, our future will be very bleak if we don't shift paradigms and shift the culture away from what it has been, because right now we are in a pretty steady decline.
Mayor Dave Bing and the city council.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that you're seeing them working a lot better together now. I think that actually, when you really look at the outcome of things that the mayor has taken to the city council, you'll find that there has been a lot more harmony than people really realize. I think sometimes we get caught up in the hype of the media, you know, and city council this, mayor that. But at the bottom line is, where do the votes go, and how do the projects go, and do they get passed? And for the most part, they have been passed. You know, I mean, there are two branches of government. There's the executive branch, it's the legislative branch. I think that it is an arena that you have to have discussion, sometime a pretty lively discussion. But at the end of the day, I think both parties are going to do the best, what's best for the city of Detroit. We really don't have a choice now, because at this point in time, if we don't, the governor that you mentioned earlier has a way of looking at that and correcting that situation, and that's through an emergency financial manager. I don't think the mayor or the city council wants that to happen in the city of Detroit, and I don't think the governor wants that to happen, okay? I mean, but at the same time, we cannot continue down a downward spiral. If that is the situation that is occurring, something has to happen to change that direction.
You hear the phrase, a renaissance zone. Mm-hmm. When I was on the south side of Chicago, George, there were no renaissance zones. What's a renaissance zone?
Well, the renaissance zone was an incentive. I called it the granddaddy of all incentives. It kind of basically, for up to a 15-year period, eliminated Most of your the business is taxes, both income tax, property tax, and eliminated the utility excise tax. But more importantly, too, is that it was something that helped lower the business costs, and it was really supposed to be geared towards communities that were underdeveloped, not developed, being developed, that needed investment, not for those that are already prospering. Because why would you give that benefit to somebody who's moving to a community that is doing all right? It was a tool to induce and to help, low-income areas or in urban areas. So from that standpoint, it was a major tool. Some cities did it properly, some didn't. I'm not that happy with the way Detroit did it, at least that first round of the Renaissance Zones, because I think they defeated the purpose because they didn't hold companies accountable for producing jobs and making the investment that they said they would. Some of them were Renaissance Zones were put in properties that really should not have been put on. And so you really didn't get the true benefit. I think we did a better job later in regards to identifying what types of projects you want for those zones than in holding companies accountable for the jobs and investment they claimed they were going to make when receiving that benefit.
Recently, Whole Foods made an announcement that they're coming to Detroit's Midtown.
Yes.
Where and what does that mean to us?
Well, this is a real game changer for Detroit. It's going to be in Midtown on John R. between Wood. On Mac between John R. and Woodward, behind the Ellington condominiums. This is very important because Detroiters spend over $1 billion shopping outside of Detroit. As a matter of fact, if you were to go to Whole Foods in the suburbs, or a Holiday Market in Royal Oak, or Trader Joe's, I guarantee you, every time I go to them, I see a pretty big percentage of people who are Detroit residents. So, one, I want to commend the Whole Foods organization for believing in Detroit and making this move. But also, it is a game changer from the standpoint that we feel that this it provides options that Detroiters currently don't have. Not only does it provide options that Detroiters don't have, but also we feel that this is going to be a successful store, so successful that we will probably go get more, and we don't have to provide as many incentives in the future as we do as the initial with the initial pioneers, so to speak, when they come into the city. But that choice and options for Detroit workers and Detroit residents, I think, is a very critical one, because I can't tell you how many times since I've had this job that, and every wife of a mayor of Detroit that I've served, which has been three since I've had this job, first thing they say is, you got to get a Whole Foods in Detroit, Georgia. So, but again, this is really something that it was something that the people of this city wanted and have been asking for, and we hope that it's the first of many.
We're talking to George Jackson. He's also the chairman of the board of the Eastern Market Corporation. And when we come back, we'll ask him about the Eastern Market. And I'm Jack Rasool, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with George Jackson, Jr., chairman of the board of Eastern Market Corporation. George? Go ahead.
Yes, in terms of Eastern Market, that's one of the hats I wear in addition to the at the Detroit Economic Growth Corporation. And one of the things we're trying to do with Eastern Market is develop the area and the market itself into more than just a Saturday event, which is a wonderful tradition in the city of Detroit. But it has good bones and good structure for it to be more than what it is. So we formed a corporation that took over operations from the city of Detroit a few years ago. And we've received some funding from both the city, several foundations. And then we hired Chan Krieger, a world-class urban planner out of Boston and Harvard, who developed a district plan. And that district plan includes improving the sheds, which we're now underway. Actually, two of them are done, and we have plans for all of them to be refurbished and renovated, including use for indoor use, but also a plan that includes where we outline where housing would be, more retail, And also maintaining the wholesale network there as well. So essentially what we're literally doing is trying to create a little town within a town, just as we're doing on Midtown and on the riverfront. And it would be an extension of what's going on the riverfront and Midtown, connected to the riverfront by the DeQuinder Cut, which already goes to Eastern Market, but we're going to try to take that all the way up to Mac eventually. So what we're going to have there now would be, again, residential, retail, as well as the wholesale, but also a sense of community, sort of a neighborhood that is active on a 7-day basis, not just on a Saturday.
George Jackson, when you look forward 10 years, tell us what Detroit will look like and be.
Well, there's going to be a lot of connectivity to what is going on in what looks like isolated areas right now. I kind of mentioned the fact that the connection between the riverfront, Eastern Market, and Midtown, that would be more trails in regards to non-motorized vehicles. I think that you're going to find that there'll be a lot more people in terms of population in areas now that are not heavily populated, including the riverfront, where we have already designated sites for future development, one being Uniroyal, which we announced last week, finally after 40 years. Again, I think that you're going to find it to be a pretty vibrant place, and a place that you're going to have a lot of able to walk, either get on a light rail or walk from one place to in very short order. But I think you're going to find it to be very dynamic, basically, with the connections between the various communities. And I think you're going to find it to be, in this area, much higher educated folks and with good incomes. And because we're starting to see that already, actually. And so from that standpoint, I think also will be a place that companies and people will want to be in. We still have a lot of challenges over and beyond the areas I mentioned. But I think we got to make sure that we have a core that is solid and thriving, and so that we could become known as a hip city. And then after that, people sort of take over and do their own thing from that standpoint.
George Jackson, you and I were hip 50 years ago, huh? 40 years ago, 30 years ago, for one day maybe. George, most of us view change as something negative, tough, bad. Change is great for everybody else, but not us. You seem to thrive on new challenges, new horizons. Why and how?
Well, I will say this, and one thing I like about the job that I'm in now is I've never been bored one day. I haven't been bored 1 hour, to be truthful. You know, I think the change is what's made it, which I like to see change if it's a positive change. I think one thing that I've had going for myself in this job is that I have a passion for what I do. I mean, I remember as a young man hoping that Detroit would have more access to the waterfront, never thinking that one that I would be somebody who's actually negotiating with the cement companies to vacate the riverfront, which now is a river walk and a state park. You know, so from that standpoint, I think the change is one that I have a lot of love for this city. And I'm tired of people, and I'm bad-mouthing our town. And so instead of just talk about it and arguing, I'm fortunate to be in a position where I could do something about it. You know, every time you look at a book Cadillac Hotel, remember it was empty for 25 years, 30 years, and, you know, people would come into town and say, well, man, there's another wreck in Detroit or what have you, or when we used to have nothing but wig shops and in downtown on Woodward, you know, to be able to sit back and do something about that and bring about change and see people enjoy the fruits of that type of labor. I mean, I think that that's why the change is important. And having a critical mass of other people and partners who are working with the DEGC in terms of making it happen, downtown partnership, for example, Invest Detroit, Sue Mosey over here in Midtown. You know, this change is exciting. I love going to those groundbreakings, too. I mean, when you see something and now you know it's going to be a viable, attractive project.
We've been blessed, Southeast Michigan, for the last 15 years with a great couple, Tony and Sarah Early.
Yes.
Led Detroit Energy. They did so much for this area in the way of charity, et cetera. And he's taking on a new challenge out in San Francisco, Pacific Gas and Electric. They're going to continue to live here. What's the biggest things you learned from Tony Early?
Well, Tony was my boss at DTE, and but also he was a friend, and he was a mentor. And, you know, I really, it's a relationship that I care a great deal about. But one thing that I learned from him as a manager, which I emulated, was that, you know, you got to let people do their jobs. And your role as a manager is to make sure they have an environment which allows them, your employees, to accept the responsibility, but also give them the authority and stand behind your employees in terms of that authority and responsibility that they have. So I remember a time when somebody once said they didn't like a decision I made, or they went up to Tony one day and somebody said, well, you know, I want this, and George wouldn't do this. He said, well, that's George's job, and that's George Jackson's decision. He supported my decision. There was nobody that could go around me. And I think the key thing there was is that having confidence, put people in the right place, hire the right people, give them the responsibility, but also give them the authority, and then stand behind that individual, your employees.
Another family, the Illich family, was really the first to come downtown and put their money.
But a real American, you know, just an icon of, in terms of American story in regards to Mike Illich. I mean, he went to Cooley High, too, by the way. But I'm just saying, in terms of just working from the west side of Detroit and growing an empire, that the Illiches have, you know, basically you could do a movie on them in regards to example of achievement in the United States of America. So from that standpoint, you know, again, they've done a lot for the city, and they are a major employer, a major taxpayer, and I'm sure there's more to come.
Where are they going to put this new hockey arena?
Well, I can't talk about that.
I'll get you free tickets to the Tigers playoffs. As our time winds down, last question. What advice, George, would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I would say be very open-minded in terms of what goals you pursue, but also make sure that you have find something that you have a passion for. Because when you find something that you have a passion for, to work on, and to work towards, you'll find that it's a lot easier for you to reach that goal. Much easier for you to overcome barriers and obstacles, because they will come in the way. And also then, once you've done that, don't quit. Keep going. Understand that those barriers are meant, either you got to go around them, go over them, or just knock them down.
George Jackson, we're watching this town transform before our very eyes. And an awful lot of the reason is because of your sweat, your fingerprints everywhere in this town. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you very much, Jack.
And good luck with your golf game.
Thank you. I'd really need help there.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.